Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, A-State Athletics officially concludes the athletic year. Men's basketball doing something really cool, lending a helping hand to a community in need. We'll talk about that. A new system president has been named. But the big news this week, at least in the world of athletics, A-State Baseball hiring the sixth head coach in program history, and joining us now, it's the new head man, Mike Silva. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here, and we want to be able to tell your story a little bit and how you got to Arkansas State and just your vision for the future, but I want to start with yesterday, and we're recording this on Friday morning. Yesterday was the press conference. To see you and your family, your wife Reagan, your son Dylan in there, and to see the kind of reception that you had, I know that had to mean a whole lot to you coming to Jonesboro for the first time.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, it was more than I expected, obviously. And the way it made me feel was incredible. But more importantly, the way it made them feel. You feel wanted somewhere, and you feel like people are excited that you're joining their community and their university. I mean, that's really been, honestly, the feeling since the first conversation I had with Jeff and Brandon. And yeah, it was awesome. And so it was definitely a special day for us. You know, life's about moments. That was a special one for us as a family. And, you know, just hitting the ground running and drinking water out of a fire hydrant right now. So it's been a lot of fun.
Let's go back and kind of start from the beginning. Now, you've spent most of your coaching career in the South.
Mm-hmm.
But your hometown is listed as Hull, Massachusetts.
It is.
And I had to look it up because I didn't know where Hull was, but it's a beach town, right?
It is.
Boston Harbor. So yes. It looks like a beautiful place. Talk about growing up there, your family and...
Yeah, I mean, just unbelievable community. I'm extremely proud to be from that community. You know, there's a saying there calling Hull, you're a Hull kid if you grew up there. It was just a tough, hard-nosed beach community 20 miles south of Boston. A lot of pride. Just a really close-knit place. And I still try to get back there when I can, sometimes once a year, sometimes once every couple of years. 7 miles long, a half a mile wide, a peninsula. I mean, I fly home to Boston, I take a boat to my hometown. And just a really special place. The unique part is I don't think anybody from there has ever done what I'm doing. And, you know, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to come down south and play college baseball. And my wife is from Texas. And, you know, she laughs all the time because, you know, I love the South. I love the people. I love the South. It's home for us, and I don't envision myself ever going back north, although I like to go and visit and see everybody, and you never forget where you came from. And a lot of the values of that place instilled on me, hard work and toughness and community matters, and, you know, that's really carried me to where I am today.
Did you have the accent?
Yeah, I did. I started out coaching in Texas, and my wife and I were married, and I was getting my butt kicked recruiting because I was a Yankee and I had a Boston accent, and I'd be sitting sometimes on a ranch in the middle of Texas, and, you know, a dad would just come out and say, "You talk funny." And
that's a challenge.
It's definitely a challenge. And I had to work at that, to be honest with you. And so I've kind of lost the accent. Occasionally it'll come out, not very often. And it's hard for people to understand you. I had a really strong, I mean, where I grew up, my mom, when she comes to town and you guys get to meet her, and she's the best, and she's probably the reason I am where I am today. If she goes to the convenience store and tries to buy something, my wife has to go in and translate for her. So it's unique.
So did you grow up a Red Sox fan? Mm-hmm. Is that how you got into baseball?
Yeah. When you grow up there, you don't have a choice. It's Red Sox, you know, Bruins, Celtics, Patriots. And if you're anything else, they'll probably kick you out of town. So, yeah, I grew up diehard, all those teams. And, I can still remember my first time walking into Fenway Park and what a special place. And I've wanted to do this my whole life. I've always wanted to have a life in baseball and to do it. And now it's kind of normal for us because this has been our life. But, yeah, I'm proud of that. You know, how many people grow up when they're a little kid? And I'm 43 years old, and I'm doing exactly what I dreamed of doing when I was a little kid. That's unique.
So why? Because you meant it's, you know, Boston's a sports town with every professional sport. So why or how is it baseball?
Yeah, I remember my first, you know, Little League when you're a kid, and it's different now with the select teams. And You know, my town, like I said, it's 7 miles long, and opening day for Little League was a big deal. I played for Richardson's Insurance Company. That was my first team, and we were purple and gold, and, you know, they painted your face, and the town had a big parade, and, you know, I grew up. My grandfather was an excellent player. He was the guy that kind of took me around all the games when I was growing up, and, you know, it's instilled in you. I loved it from the first time I got to play. I was the type of kid to wake up in the morning for a 6 p.m. game, put my uniform on before I put my clothes on and be ready to go, and probably drove my parents crazy. You know, that's all I want to do is play. I wanted to play all the time, and just always loved the game, loved everything about it. But my earliest memories from that probably instilled that, how big of a deal it was in my community for the opening day of Little League.
I'm honestly, like, my takeaway in that story is that I'm surprised they let there be a purple and gold team.
Well, I didn't pick the colors.
I'm just surprised they let the team have Lakers colors in the league, period. They must have ran out of combinations.
Especially being in Boston, you're right. You know, as far as that goes, like, back in those days, and it's different now, we had a draft. You had to go to tryouts, they had a draft. Remember, they would stand out in front, and you get to be the first pick or whatever. It was a big deal. Times were different back then. It was unique, and just fell in love with it from the first time I had the opportunity to do it. But I didn't play my first game of organized baseball until I was 9 years old.
The love for baseball obviously was there. When did you know that college ball was a possibility?
I don't know. You know, I played hockey too, and, you know, after my sophomore year of high school, I think everybody probably thought I was going to make a career playing hockey. And it's hard, right? Because, you know, when you're a high school kid, and I was obviously a good athlete in high school, and, you know, you're in a small town like that, it's, you know, everybody knows who you are, and everybody's telling you what you should do with your life. And I wanted to do baseball, and that was a passion for me. And so, you know, I had to go home and tell my parents I was going to turn down, you know, probably better opportunities to pursue a career in hockey, to go chase down baseball and go to a junior college. And but they were supportive, and, you know, they said, you got to fight for your dreams if that's what you want to do, and make hard decisions. And so here I am.
And I want to talk about, obviously, how this has impacted kind of the positions you've coached along the way, but you came through as a catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at what point, I guess, even in your youth career, did that become the thing? Did it start out because you were the only kid on the team not too scared to get behind the plate, or how did we get there?
No, I mean, look, in my hometown right now, if you went for a walk at night and it got dark out, you know, they don't have air conditioning all the houses at home. That's unique because we don't get that warmer weather. So the windows will be open. And every single, it could be a 95-year-old lady that's widowed, and she could be sitting in her back porch, and you'll hear the Red Sox games. And so that's just kind of the passion. I grew up loving Tony Pena as a catcher. I mean, loved him. Used to try to emulate him in the backyard, and just always wanted to catch.
Back to hockey real quick. Were you a goalie?
No, I was a left wing and center, and I just grew up, you know, you learn to skate there before you learn to walk, you know, and in the wintertime, we don't get great baseball weather, obviously. I mean, April 1st, I remember getting a foot of snow and games getting canceled, but the fire department will go open up the hydrants and flood the city parks, and you can go skate, and I was an active kid, you know, probably, my parents would tell you, probably not the best student. The fact that I have two college degrees, I think they're pleased with that, and I just wanted to go play. I was active, and probably the same thing with catching, guys, like, you're in every play when you're catching. You're involved in every play. And I think part of the reason my parents kept me in all the sports that I played and kept me active, because probably to keep me out of trouble, to be honest with you. I was probably a handful for them to deal with. My mom bought us T-shirts a couple years ago for myself, my younger brother. And it was funny. He said, the middle one, I'm the reason we have rules. My younger brother had a shirt that said, I'm the younger one. The rules don't apply to me. And so that kind of gives you an idea. I took them through the ringer.
You know, and I asked that question because Brad and I just here in the last couple of months had a great visit with a former player here at A-State, and I'm sure you'll get to know Liam Hicks because he comes back, and he's a guy that's actually from Toronto, and he grew up playing baseball and hockey, and one of the things we kind of got into was just the similarities between the two sports, and he kind of broke it down for us, but he's doing a great job right now, doing well in the Rangers organization, and fantastic player, but that certainly kind of brought me back to that. So you get to Northwestern Oklahoma State. You spend 3 years there. When you look at just kind of where you've been, you actually received your bachelor's at Bellevue University in Nebraska, and then got your master's at East Central University in Oklahoma. So you were at three different schools.
Well, yeah, but like, here's the deal with that. So I went to play independent ball, professional baseball, when I finished playing at Northwestern Oklahoma State. And remember, this was before like online classes and correspondence courses. And I got a job offer midway through that summer to start my college baseball coaching career.
Okay.
And so I was off to coaching. I was married. So my wife was like, you're finishing your degree. And I was trying to go through my school, but at the time they didn't offer any. I had like a semester, I think, left, or maybe a year left. And so we just inquired about, there was a handful of schools in the country that offer either correspondence or online courses if you had X amount of hours completed to your degree. And Bellevue took all my courses. And so it accelerated that process. And obviously financially for us, we had negative money at the time. And so it just made too much sense for us. And to be honest, man, like that was a great place and a great experience education-wise. I hate to say it, but I probably learned more in my year getting my degree from Bellevue, just the instructors and the people and how they worked with you. It was tremendous.
I thought it was real interesting when you mentioned this during the press conference. You met your wife, Reagan, in college. I'm guessing this was at Northwestern Oklahoma State.
Yes.
You're a young coach. You talk about the financial situation. You're trying to make ends meet. But on your wedding day, you were mowing.
Yeah. I mean, I had a job to do. I needed money and... You know, I don't know what she was thinking, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, we got married at the courthouse in Clarendon and went to work after. I mean, I know that's not everybody's probably dream, but you know, for us, it's kind of been the epitome of our life and it's kind of continued. And to think that we'd be here today, people thought we were crazy. I was 22 and she was 23. And, you know, 20 years later, it'd be 21 years this August, and every dorm room, every step, every success, every failure. So this is a family business for us, and she doesn't get enough credit. You know, I wouldn't be here. She's a big reason for the success that I've been fortunate enough to have.
And I think, too, it was interesting, and I don't know why, and you can speak to it, but, like, you guys have been married 20 years, but your kid is 10. And that sometimes I would tell any young couple, like, you need to be selfish a little while. Take some time. Be a couple. Some race to have kids. But got a chance to visit with Dylan. That's who I sat and talked with yesterday at the press conference. And he was worth the wait.
Yeah, he's man, what a blessing. I mean, just the greatest blessing in my life. And he knows what's going on now. You know, he's old enough to know what's going on. And just, you know, it's surreal. The thing, it took us 10 years to have him. We were blessed to have him. Like I said, greatest blessing of our lives. And it's just been a treat ever since. And I tell people, parenting, I think you all would agree, it's the greatest, most miserable experience of your life. Just because, you know, you love something so much and you want everything to be good for him. And that's what I mean from the miserable side of it. But, you know, the greatest part of it is just watching them grow up and being a part of that. It's incredible.
While we're on Dylan here, I do want you to tell the story you told us before we started recording about him wanting to have a suit. He wanted to look like you for the press conference.
Yeah, it's awesome, right? If you're a dad, you know, for a dad, what a special deal. My wife took him. We live in Thibodaux, and home is about 15 miles away. And I said, what are you doing? She said, I have to go get him clothes. And I said, he was crying, you know, because we're moving and upset, obviously, like any child would be. And then she said, he's kind of flipped the switch, like, hey, what's dad wearing for the press conference? She said, well, he'll be in a suit. And he's like, well, I want to be in a suit too then. And so at that point, you're doing whatever to kind of settle him down and get him. And, you know, he could have probably asked for whatever at that point. We would have buckled. So he went and picked it out himself. And so he was fired up and ready to go yesterday. And I mean, he had a special day yesterday. That's the first time anywhere we've ever been that people have made him feel like he was a part of it. And he's old enough to know. And that was really special for us.
The interesting thing, and I'm sure, I bet everybody that talked with him asked him the same first question I did, because I think the first thing I asked him was, you play baseball? And he said, nope. He's a basketball and soccer player.
That's right.
You okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we were 8 years old coming back from Little League, and I'll never forget, he's in the back of my truck with a little high-pitched kid voice, and he just asked, he said, Dad. And I said, yeah. He said, are you going to be mad at me if I don't want to play baseball anymore? And I want him to be his own person. This was my path, right? And he's a great kid, and he's well-rounded. Now, don't underestimate, he wants to win. He's locked in the game. So he knows what's going on. He's fired up. And he still comes up to the field and will take ground balls and play catch. And he'll hit, and we'll get in the cages sometimes. He's just kind of his own person. He plays the piano. He's an excellent student. I mean, he's involved in so many things. And I just want him to be involved in whatever and find what his passion is. And we've got him. He likes playing soccer and basketball better. And he gets these little kits and likes technology and building robots. And so he's his own person, and I want him to be his own person. I don't want him to grow up and be, you know, 20-something years old and hate his dad for making him do something he didn't want to do. So
he is a smart boy. So it was funny because asked about playing. But then I said, well, what's your favorite sport to watch? And he said, baseball. Well, what's your favorite team? Assuming the answer was going to be, you know, major league team. I didn't know what. We said, well, it's Arkansas State now. That's my dog
quick.
Right there.
Yeah, if I told you how many times he's moved and put a different hat on and – Yeah, he's fired up to be here, and he's going to be the biggest Arkansas State baseball fan there is. And beyond that, he's going to be at the basketball games watching. He loves doing that. He'll be at the football games, be a part of it. It's crazy because he's not like a sports junkie, like as far as he plays, but he'll be at all the stuff and look forward to going to it and know when everybody's playing.
All right, so I want to go through real quick because it was a long journey to becoming a Division I head coach. Mm-hmm. And just appreciating the journey, I think, is a big part of this. And you were an assistant coach, then a head coach on the junior college level, head coach at Clarendon College and Galveston College, then a Division I assistant at Texas State under Ty Harrington, mm-hmm. who actually was an assistant at A-State at one time. Longtime Texas State head coach from 2013 to 2015. You were there with him. Then an assistant at Little Rock under Chris Curry. Really like Coach Curry there from 2017 to 2018. And then the associate head coach at Louisiana Tech from 2018 to 2021. So finally, in 2022, you get that opportunity. You become a Division I head coach when you take the Nichols job. Nichols was a program that really hadn't had success. So you were there for 3 years. You go in, you win the Southland Conference Tournament each of the last two seasons, including the regular season championship in 2023. The obvious question is, it didn't happen overnight, but how did it happen?
Look, a lot of hard work. I think when you come up the way I've come up with, you got to work hard, and you went to the school of hard knocks, and you learn a lot of hard lessons, and you've been underestimated. And look, the reality is when I took the job at Nichols, there was a lot of prominent people in this industry that told me I was committing career suicide and leaving Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech was my big break. It's not a secret, you know, what we did there and winning the conference and hosting a regional for the first time in school history. And, you know, we pumped a lot of really good players out, and it was hard to leave there. It was definitely a more comfortable situation. I was financially finally doing well. My family was doing well there, and I wanted to be head coach. There's only 300 and whatever of these jobs in the world. You know, I had the opportunity to do that. I went down to Nichols, and just like yesterday, I had a press conference. I think people were cautiously optimistic. The community was really nice, and you got this crazy guy from the Northeast telling folks in the Deep South that I'm bringing championships to Thibodaux, Louisiana. I don't think they could have ever fathomed what we did. We won three championships in 3 years, went to two regionals. We were three seed in a regional this year, and unfortunately, that got away from us, but we were good enough to make a run in that thing. And yeah, I don't know. It's been wild and crazy, but I said it yesterday, you know, finishing in second place isn't something that wakes me up in the morning and makes me want to get my feet on the ground. And I just think if you have that attitude, how are you going to get players and recruits and the community excited? And I get that responsibility. And I did when I was in Thibodaux, you know, like you got to deliver. That's the thing. That you stand at the podium is great. Delivering's a heck of a lot harder. But when you do that, the gratification and the community support that I got, it was insane. And that's a place that, you know, however long this journey goes, I'll always be indebted to Nichols State University for giving me that opportunity.
So what you did there gets you on a lot of people's radar, including Arkansas State and other people who wanted to have conversations with you. So like when you stand at the podium at Arkansas State, you can say, hey, that thing we did at Nichols, I'm going to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you stand there at Nichols, there's nothing to base saying you're going to do that on. What made you believe you could pull that off?
Well, I don't think there's nothing to base. I mean, I have an ego too. I mean, we've won everywhere I've ever been my whole career, places nobody else has ever been able to win. And so that confidence was there. But yeah, you're right. How did I know I was going to be able to pull that off? I mean, failing wasn't an option. I had to make it. You know, when you have to make it, when there is no plan B, you're dangerous a little bit. In the same situation, this, I don't have anything to fall back on. I'm 43 with zero qualifications to do anything else. I mean, that's just the reality. I have a family to support, and not succeeding is just not part of the plan. There's no, it didn't get it done, or man, we played them close. Like, I don't live in that world. This is a world where you're judged based on your productivity. And that's it. You got to produce. And obviously, yeah, you said about the other jobs and people. I've been offered a bunch of jobs. It's been crazy to think the last 2 years, the amount of opportunities that I've had after grinding for as many years as I had to. It's been surreal. But I'm older now. I'm mature. And I've been extremely calculated on now because I've had the privilege to have other opportunities. I'm extremely calculated on my next move. And so I could have went back next year. We're going to be really good again next year. I mean, You know, so I didn't have to leave. It was going to take a place where I felt like there was a special opportunity to do something special for me to leave.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars.
Bring a vehicle,
get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with new A-State head baseball coach Mike Silva here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. An incredible 3 years at Nichols. You mentioned you had other opportunities. So why A-State? What made this an attractive job?
Well, I mean, the conference, you know, I like to be challenged. I'm an extremely competitive person, and this is one of the best conferences in all of college baseball. And so that, number one, was this conference has always been an interest of me. I've been in the conference before. I understand the task that it takes and the type of teams you play week in and week out. And then, you know, the first time I spoke to Brandon and Jeff, you know, I didn't know that, oh, yeah, this is something that I'm super jacked up about. I mean, I didn't know, you know, but I knew I wanted to talk to them. And I knew Jonesboro, not to the extent that I'm learning it every day. And then I kind of knew their histories a little bit and where they came from and what they've accomplished. And I thought really quickly, I was like, I like these guys. I like where their vision is. I like what they're wanting to turn this into. And I thought we had a connection. I think that's important. And I'm a fit person. I got to be in the right place in the right community for me. And you know, finances are great and I'm doing fine here. I can buy a steak, but like it wasn't, that's not it for me. That's not it. You know, I feel really blessed and fortunate to be in a pretty comfortable position with myself and my family, but it was a fit. It was a community. I'm the type of person that I want to be out in the community. I want to develop relationships. I love building. I mean, that's what, if you go look at my resume, that's basically what my whole career has been. I've never taken over a turnkey place. I mean, Lane gave me the opportunity at Louisiana Tech. I'll never forget. We were sitting having a steak and he said, we haven't won a conference tournament game since I've been here and I want to host a regional. And it fired me up. You know, I was like, This guy, our visions align. Like this guy is wired the way I'm wired. And we did that together. And I think he'd tell you that. And I'll always be indebted to him. And we're really close friends to this day. I mean, he was watching the press conference yesterday. We're really close. Our families are close. And so, yeah, that was to me here. I lived in Ruston. I loved the community. I loved the people. And they treated us extremely well. Thibodeau, I mean, it's just incredible what we got to experience there. And then obviously coming to Jonesboro with a little bit bigger town, a little bit bigger market, that was attractive to me as well. And then we were talking when we were driving here, you see that Red Wolf logo all over town and the pride. And I thought, okay, what if we bring a winner back there? What will that be like? And so that interests me. And then it progressed really quickly. And here I am.
You know, you mentioned finishing second doesn't get you out of bed. And that's awesome. But you've talked about the league.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the comments you made at your press conference is you thought your Nichols team could finish fifth or so in the Sun Belt last year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you want to finish first, and that's where you're headed. But how important is, or what is it nice to know, hey, now in this league, you finish fifth, you're in the conversation still getting in anyway, because our league's going to get four or five teams in.
Yeah, 100%. And you're going to get recognition on the national stage. And look, when you do this for a living, I always say Selection Monday is like Christmas morning for college baseball coaches. Once you've sat in that seat and seen your name called and seen the reaction from the community that you're in and all that, like you don't want anything else. That's all you want. You want to be there. And so, yeah, I mean, definitely that was another interest to coming here. I know the strength of the league and how respected it is nationally. And so, I mean, yeah, if we finish in the top five, we're going to be in conversations to go to a regional. And I want to continue to play in the postseason. I want to be in that field of 64.
You mentioned you'd been to Jonesboro before as a visitor. You said, I like these guys. You could tell that you had something with those conversations with Jeff and Brandon. But look, you had seen the facilities. It was no secret there needed to be some upgrades. So what made you feel confident that commitment was going to be made towards baseball?
That's a good question. It's kind of a loaded question. So, you know, you have to take a leap of faith. I think Dr. Shields, you know, he was involved in the process. I communicated with him, and the visions just continued to align. I know the facilities are not ideal currently, but, you know, mine weren't where I was either. They weren't even close to the top of our conference. And so, I don't know. I mean, you can use it as an excuse for motivation. Yeah, I mean, they put it in my contract, too. Obviously, you guys, my contract's public. Obviously, you can do this for a living. It is. And, you know, them willing to make that commitment, put it in writing, was significant. And did that impact it? Absolutely. But I'm not going to use that as a crutch or as an excuse either way. I mean, hopefully it gets done in a timely fashion. I think it kind of has to now. But excuses are for losers. I get it. I know all the challenges here. I get it. I get the NIL. I get all of it. But winners are, and successful people are willing to find a way to do things and overcome things, in my opinion, that unsuccessful people aren't willing to do. And so it's going to take a lot of hard work. I'm not naive to this. I get some of the skepticism. I haven't got a ton of time on social media. I've seen all the feedback has been probably 99.9% super positive, but I tend to focus as a coach on the skepticism just because I don't need extra fuel to my fire, but I'll take it. And, you know, and so at the end of the day, we need to put really good players on the field. We need to coach them at an extremely high level and develop them. And if we do that, I feel like we can compete in this conference day in and day out. And I think people are going to see that here shortly.
You said yourself, you're a relationship guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the double-edged sword of where college athletics is. Unfortunately, there's a lot of instances where that matters less. Things mm-hmm. are getting more transactional. And you've mentioned kind of the NIL component. That's obviously what we're referring to. But I guess how confident are you that in baseball, you know, things are still to a point where kind of in recruiting and then in developing that roster and keeping guys around, the relationships still matter?
Well, I mean, again, track record, right? Like the biggest telltale sign of, I think, future history in a lot of cases is past history. I'm not saying you can't change your past and become better. God knows I have. But look at the players I had there. None of them left. You think I didn't have a whole bunch of people trying to go back door and get my guys out of Nichols last year? How come none of them left? And so that'll be challenging this year because a lot of them are really good players and they're going to be in the portal now and everybody's going to be calling them and offering them truckloads of money, and that's part of it. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I think players still want that. Just like when people say you can't coach your kids hard, I coach them hard. I do. I demand a lot out of them. I think that if you're going to come and play for me and play this program, then we're going to demand your best every day, and I'm not going to apologize for it. And if you want to play for somebody else that doesn't, then go play for somebody else. And that's still kind of the way I look at it. I don't think there's really another way to look at it. You think that Nick Saban, Alabama, doesn't demand a lot from his players? I don't know anybody. You think Jay Johnson, LSU, doesn't demand a lot from his players? And so, yeah, the financial component's there. I'm not naive to the reality of we have to come around in that area and we have to quickly. But I'm not sitting in some kid's living room and paying them to decide to come here. Now, hopefully we can financially make it where it's doable and they can make a conscious decision on what's the best place for them and they want to join this program. But I said the same thing out to Nichols. You know, everybody said, we have no money. We have no facilities. I said, we have great people. We have a great community. We have all those things. And I think the people here are dying for a winner, and I think they're going to support us. I said it at the press conference. I got to earn that. I get that. That's my job, to go and earn that trust and respect. And I have to do that. I don't expect people to give you that. They don't know me. And so it's my job to get to know them and build that. And is it going to take time? Yes, but I'm not the most patient. I think patient coaches are unemployed, so you still have to work with a sense of urgency every day and find a way to overcome the obstacles while you're building.
You had mentioned during the press conference that you had Zoomed with the team yesterday morning, but you wanted to meet as soon as you could with everybody one-on-one. And I know you were asked the question just how fast you're looking to assemble a staff and a roster, and you said warp speed, mm-hmm. and we talked about it before we sat down and started recording. It's chaos right now, but you kind of thrive in chaos.
Yeah, it's this business. And you were talking about, like, even before that, the relationships, and, you know, it is transactional now. So you can't have a 6-year plan. You have to have a 1-year plan that you're going to execute 6 years in a row. That's how this business has changed. And if you're just saying, oh, next year, no, the most important time is right now. And then tomorrow, the most important time is going to be right now. And if you live differently than that, and it has changed the industry from the standpoint of, this is 24/7, 365 days a year now. And if you're not in for that, then you're not going to survive and you're not going to have success. There's no way. And so, like, that part of it, you know, first and foremost. And what did you ask me a minute ago? The question?
Just about getting to know the team, assembling a roster, and the chaos that goes along with it.
Yeah, I like the activity, and you'd be shocked the amount of people that have reached out that want to come here with me. It's been really humbling for me. Some of the names blew my mind, like them reaching out. And obviously, I always have a list of guys that if we're going to do this, you know, I'm going to target, and they're targeting. I think in the next few days that'll all start coming out. We're in the process right now, as this morning, of getting that staff finalized, and I think by Monday, probably at the latest, it'll be done and people be moving to Jonesboro. And but I wanted to get through, and I wanted to visit with the players. I still haven't got through the roster. That's when I leave here, that's my next order of business today, but to visit with them and call them all. And some of them are in town. I'll meet with the ones that I can in town. And yeah, it's going to be a lot. And look, change is hard for everybody. It's hard on the players, it's hard on the community sometimes because they have relationships, you know. And so I definitely understand and respect all those challenges, but at the end of the day, everybody loves a winner, and you got to find a way to produce and put one on the field.
And there was an interesting mix in the crowd yesterday of your current players. There were recruits that people recognize there, high school coaches in the stands, and a couple of high school coaches who are also former players at Arkansas State. So, I mean, everybody was paying attention to what was going on.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's, you know, I think everybody's intrigued, right? I mean, you have their attention right now, and so we got to make really good decisions and get this thing rolling and keep people excited about our baseball program.
Well, we couldn't be more excited to have you here. I know we're going to talk with you much, much more, but really neat to be able to sit down and kind of hear your story a little bit. And what's the immediate plan for the family right now? What do you guys need to see next?
Yeah, the immediate plan for the family is, like I said, it's a family business. I'm going to get the family back home probably Sunday or Monday. I'm going to turn around, pick up my truck, and I'll be here full time. And she's going to do what she always does. She's going to sell the house and then buy another one here and, you know, the whole deal. So it's wild.
Nobody thinks about that stuff.
Yeah, she does. I promise you she does. Yeah, I promise you she does. And I want to get them here as soon as possible, and they want to be as well in a timely manner. But as you guys know, they're probably not going to see much of me for the next, you know, 60 to 90 days, whether they're living here or not. And so she'll take care of all that stuff. And again, I don't know what she's thinking. She should have left me a long time ago. And I don't know who would sign up for this. And to be quite frank, I ask myself a lot, could you do this if you were on the other side of this? And I don't know, but she loves it, and she loves me for some reason, and I keep tricking her, and she keeps sticking around, so she'll do that, and we'll get to Jonesboro. I'm going to be here. I mean, I'll be home for probably 6 or 7 hours and back up. There's just too much work to do, and we knew that when we took the job. It's not like, oh, my God, you have to do this. It's like, hey, you get to do this, you know, and I tell people that all the time. I have a get-to job. I don't have a have-to job. There's a lot of people that wake up every day in this country that have have-to jobs, and I respect that and understand that, but I don't take lightly the fact that I get to wake up every day, and I'm living my dream, too, just like the young men I'm recruiting are, and I get to do exactly what I want to do for the most part.
I got two quick ones. In this case, having a good coach's wife is a big deal. So what was her background? She an athlete?
No.
Why does she get it so much?
My wife's dad was drafted out of high school by the Dodgers. He was one of the, I think, 50 greatest athletes in Oklahoma for high school. Had an injury back then. He didn't come back from a knee injury. And then my wife's godfather is Mike Hargrove, who was, you know, Rookie of the Year, manager in the big leagues forever. And he was extremely influential for me when I started out in my career, just being able to bounce stuff off of him and him supporting. But yeah, so she comes from a baseball background, a baseball family. And then her mom's passed, but her dad, he'll see him. He'll be around. And they love it. Think about it. Like, you just let your daughter marry a guy who's making no money, moving all over the country. I mean, so they've been super supportive since the beginning of this thing. And I think my father-in-law is as big a fan as anybody of mine. We're really, really close. And that's unique, too. And, you know, so, yeah, just one of those things.
When's the last time you skated?
You know, that's a good question. You know, believe it or not, when I lived in Little Rock, I played once a week. I played once a week. It was like 11 p.m. I'd play or something. There was a bunch of men and some old pro guys. I guess they used to have a pro team there at some point. And
yeah.
Arkansas is a great state to live in. I didn't know that before I moved to Little Rock. I'd just been through for baseball, and a lot of the guys had married girls from the area and never left to go back home, whether it was Canada or the Northeast or whatever. And so I got to know some of those guys, and I'd go play with them once a week for exercise and hang out, and it was awesome. But I don't see a skating rink anywhere on Jonesboro, so I don't think that's going to be in the plans, and there definitely was not one close to Thibodaux, Louisiana. So I still have my stuff, though, so you never know.
That's Mike Silva joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We've got more to come right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of both new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com. We mentioned the athletic season officially concluded here in the past week. And congratulations to Selassie Sampram. She competed at the NCAA Outdoor Championships in Eugene last week and finished as an honorable mention All-American.
Yep. So congratulations there. And then, you know, even while we were sitting here talking, word came out that Bradley Gelmert is going to be at the U.S. Olympic Trials.
Fantastic.
Next week in Eugene. So he'd be competing for a chance on Team USA.
And former podcast guest and one of our favorites, Cameron Newton-Smith. I don't know if you saw this, but she's trying to make the Olympic team for Australia. And you go back and listen to that visit that we had, I guess, about a year or so ago with her. And that's one of the things she talked about. That was one of her big goals, to try to make Team Australia. So certainly rooting for her. Really neat thing that the men's basketball team did this past week. They went to North Central Arkansas and helped out with the food bank after the tornadoes hit the Twin Lakes region. We had already been up there the week before for the Howl on Wheels event in Mountain Home, and thought it was cool that Coach Hodson took his players and staff up there to help out with that. Also, some big news this past week. A new system president was named, Dr. Brendan Kelly, coming from West Georgia. He was president at West Georgia, and he's going to succeed Dr. Chuck Welch. And best of luck to him, and hopefully we'll get him on the program soon.
And I haven't had a chance, obviously, to meet him yet, but I'll tell you what, I'm confident that he is coming in and will be athletic-minded. I know at West Georgia, he actually was the president when they went Division I. And the truth is, you know, we know enough of those guys on the Board of Trustees, and we know what athletics means to them, that we know it was honestly probably a prerequisite to have that alignment that everybody's talked about, even Coach Silva. So I have no reason to think that that won't be the case with Dr. Kelly.
You know, it's June, but it's such a busy week on campus, not just with the announcement of Coach Silva, but basketball, football, golf, tennis, all doing camps this week. It's been a really busy week. A whole lot of kids coming through campus.
Yeah, and more camps to come, both youth and otherwise. So it is a busy time. And that's just, you talk about on campus, that's just with athletics camps. You don't even mention the fact that, you know, there are all other kinds of camps on the Arkansas State campus. So it's a hopping place in the summer.
One thing that we haven't been able to discuss yet is the final finish as far as the Bubas Cup standings, and A-State finishing with the school record 118 Bubas Cup points. That was good for a fourth place finish, but I guess they finished second in the Bobo's Cup.
Yes. Now, Jerry Scott Smooth tried to steal that. When he put that in the press release, I had not figured that yet. So, I mean, he really he tried to swipe the Bobo's Cup math. But yeah, I guess we'd have finished tied for second in that.
Second highest per sport average in the league.
Which is what matters.
What the Bobo's Cup comes down to.
The Bubas Cup guy, hey, God bless them, and every conference has one, but it's a flawed system.
It is.
Because it just takes the total, and just, I mean, I wasn't going to get in my deep dive here, but the Sun Belt gives championships in 20 sports, so there are 20 chances to score points, right? But we only field teams in 15 of the 20. That's the second lowest total in the league, 15 of the 20. And so to finish fourth when you have the second fewest opportunities is pretty good. And obviously everybody knows the one we didn't get nothing for is bowling. And, oh, yeah, we're three times in the last 4 years the national runner-up. That's why, that per-sport average is a real good indicator of who had a great year across the board, and we were second in that.
Now, you mentioned bowling. Now, that does factor into the Learfield Director's Cup, and I thought it was really cool. And, look, there were a lot of numbers that came out with the announcement of the Bubba's Cup stuff, and there's a lot of cool things there. But
and actually I see you here, so I can catch you, that the final Director's Cup points are out, and I don't have it. I'm going off memory a little bit. Finished the second highest point total in the Sun Belt in the Learfield Director's Cup behind James Madison, who happens, it's worth saying, they had the largest operating budget in the league by a pretty healthy margin. They finished with the most Director's Cup points, but we had the second highest finish and the second highest point total in program history this year in the Learfield Director's Cup, which is the national all-sports trophy.
A number 30 ranking as far as the Women's Capital One Cup standings. Points totals tied the school record there, so that's pretty neat as well.
Yeah, it was honestly, and I've been looking at some of this because I started to kind of go speak to a group here or there, and I didn't realize as close to as what a year it was, where when you start counting track, and if you add track in to like postseason play that you have to qualify for, then that means, you know, 10 of our 16 sports qualified for some sort of postseason play this year.
Yeah, really, really good year across the board. Do want to mention a promotion that I know you put out there here in the last few days as we lead into the weekend and Father's Day. Have, I guess, through Sunday to take advantage of the Father's Day ticket sale. $99 gets you a couple of chairback seats, two hot dogs, two soft drinks to a football home game of your choice. Right.
All six of them are sitting there available for that package. And you can buy more than two tickets. You just have to be bought in multiples of two. That's basically the walk-up price for a chairback seat, more or less. If you don't have chairback season tickets, you want to try to go buy an empty seat in one for a game, that's about what it's going to cost you. So here you can sit in chairback seats on the home sideline, get vouchers for a couple of hot dogs and a couple soft drinks for $99. AceStateRedWolves.com/Father's Day. And part of the reason we threw this out there now is because of the success we had in that flash sale we did 100 days from kickoff.
Yeah.
That went great. And so hopefully this will too, if you want to take your dad to a game or heck, more than one game. But that'll be up and only live through Sunday. So hop on there, AceStateRedWolves.com/Father's Day.
And coming up a couple of days after that on Tuesday, we'll have our final Howl on Wheels stop in Fayetteville. We'll be at Gearhead Outfitters in Fayetteville. That'll be the sixth and final stop of the tour that has just really, really been good. So looking forward to that trip to Northwest Arkansas. Anything else we need to visit about before we get out of here?
No, I think that does it. A lot of ground to cover.
It's been fun. Appreciate Mike Silva coming in and joining us. Really, really enjoyed that visit. For everyone who's been a part of this one, for Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great weekend, everybody.